This is victory. It's the Book of the Week.
And it's that time of the week again. Yes, it's time for Portsmouth Authors Collective Book Club with myself, usually with Laurie Westrom, but Laurie won't be in this week, so we'll have Jackie Green sitting in for her. But we also have a chosen author every week, and today it's going to be Dave Flint. And after retiring in 2012, Dave Flint joined the Havant and District Writers Circle, where he received support and encouragement with his writing. And in 2015, he won the Portsmouth Book Fest Short Story Competition. The story was called More Than a Lark and was about three old guys living in a care home reminiscing about their past in Portsmouth during World War II. The story was to become the inspiration for his novel Becoming Brothers. The following year, another of his short stories came in third place. He has other stories in the pipeline too. In his spare time, Dave leads walks in his local area. So the book Becoming Brothers, a little bit of blurb about it. It's the Second World War and Portsmouth is experiencing its fair share of bombing raids. Three young teenage boys living in the area with their families take each day as it comes when suddenly a stranger appears amongst them. Another teenage boy their age, different but not that different, with the new boy living in sordid conditions and fighting his corner at home, he discovers he has friends and eventually his life turns a corner. A story of cruelty and kindness that brings people together. Dave Flint, welcome to Victory.
Thank you, Bob.
So I've got quite a few questions for you, and I'm intrigued already by that intro myself. Yeah. So hopefully the listener feels much the same. But your story is about a group of young boys here in Portsmouth during the Second World War. Can you tell me a little more about the story?
It starts really in London with the youngster, Forrest. His mum, who never wanted him, he lives a life of misery, really, with her. She is a lady that likes to bring her men friends home. And eventually, after a situation in the house, they move to Portsmouth, where she can find more customers for her profession.
Oh, I'm with you now.
You're with me. And that's when Forrest meets up with the other lads. They find him watching them, and he comes across as very timid, very frightened, but they eventually gel together and they take off.
All good. So the book was inspired by a short story that you had written. What inspired you to write the short story?
The book fest that I entered, they wanted something about Portsmouth. And I remember chucking pennies down to the lads in the mud.
Mudlarking.
And one thing led to another, and I started writing. And it more or less came about with Havant Writers Group.
Had you written before?
No, this was a complete shock when I retired.
So can I? Okay, so there's a clue there. So we can say you were in your 60s when you started writing.
65, yeah.
Wow. And you've taken to it like a duck to water by the look of it.
Well, it seems to flow, yeah.
And so did you enjoy writing growing up, or did it really come that late in life?
No. At school, I wasn't very academic. I had the ideas and everything that I could do, but it never came out as anything, and I never really thought any more of it. That was it, really.
Quite an amazing story, really, in itself. The fact that it takes you to retire and get to 65 years old before you realise that you can write.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the Havant Writers Group, I've got to give them a lot of credit. They helped me considerably. The criticism and encouragement to write different things and try different things, they helped a lot, yeah.
Well, obviously it has worked for you, and you've got this stunning, rather thick book out. I don't know how many pages it is.
392.
Yep, you beat me to it. There's quite a few heavy themes in the book, and I believe some of the story is quite dark in places. Can you say something about that?
Without giving anything away, there are some killings in it. It's not like a murder story. They happen. Because of the lad Forrest and his mother and her profession, some of her customers, he has to watch out for himself. And some of the incidents that happen, well, they're quite dark.
Okay, well, leave it at that, because obviously it keeps it open for anyone's mind to want to go and delve into it. But what sort of research did you have to do?
Well, not a lot, really, for the simple reason, having grown up in Portsmouth all my life, having lived here all my life, it was all around me. Some of the little ventures the lads had, I'd done. I just changed a few situations and the rest more or less fell into place. So that's it.
Well, I've got to say well done for the big thing, and that is the fact that the book is selling. And I believe you've done quite a few signings and markets and that the book has been selling well. Do you enjoy getting out there to these events?
Yeah, I wasn't sure at first, but yes, I do now. I mean, my last event was at Leon Solon and I done very, very well. I was really chuffed.
There was a big beam on his face then, and yeah, his eyes lit up very, very well.
Yes.
So what do you think's the reason for that? Do you think the story grips people in Portsmouth?
Probably. I've had all sorts of people come up to me. I mean, I had a young girl with a baby in a pushchair, bought one for her mother. People from all different ranges of life, they've come along and asked me the questions, and I find out that it's easy for me now to talk about the book with them, whoever they are.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose most authors sit down, they write a story, then they edit it and they rewrite it, and that goes on goodness how many times. How long did it take you from start to finish?
I must have been writing that particular book, getting on for 2.5, 3 years.
Do you get to a point where you think, I can't finish this?
Not with this one.
Tell me a bit more about that experience then.
I've got my spare room in the house, my computer, Dave's den. I go up there and I sit down and write. I mean, if I come to a blank, I just go on to something else and then come back. But I don't have any problems.
I was talking to an author recently and I can't remember his name. Oh, yes, I can. It was Pete Adams. And he could be writing 2 or 3 books at the same time. Mm. Could you get your head around that?
I've got 2 or 3 books going.
Well, what's going on in this world? Really?
Yes, yeah. I done one that's not for bedtime reading, the one before this, and I'm trying to rewrite it because I'm not happy with it at all.
It can't be easy, Dave, to, you know, have a story in your head and get writing about it and think, okay, now tomorrow or 6 o'clock tonight I'll start, or I'll get back into that other book that I'm writing, and your whole mindset's got to change.
I don't find that. My computer, I've got me notes up there and everything, and just switch on.
That's interesting. I suppose a bit like an artist that can go from one painting to another and then back to the other painting, I suppose, yeah. For an author. Yeah, that makes sense. To a non-author like myself, it doesn't really, because if I was writing a song, I'd want to finish that before I wrote another one. But I guess we're all different. Anyway, very interesting story, and I thank you for coming in. The important thing is, where can people now buy your books?
It's on Amazon, and there's Kindle there as well. I've had, which surprised me, I've got 8 5-star reviews on Amazon.
Well done.
Waterstones, you can order it, and any good bookshops. I haven't tried any other bookshops yet. I'm still debating there.
I don't think there's much to debate. I know that most of the independent bookshops in and around Portsmouth are very supportive of Portsmouth Authors Collective, and you should get in that door and talk to them.
Yeah.
So, Dave Flint, thank you for coming in. Author of Becoming Brothers, available from all those places we just mentioned. I'm sure Jackie will pick that up again when we have a chat with her later. You've asked for a song, any song by Jimmy Ruffin, but I think I'm going to play this one.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And we're back with part 2 after this. And back with part 2 of Portsmouth Authors Collective with myself and Jackie Green. Jackie, how are you?
I'm fine, Bob. Yeah?
Poor Laurie, she's not feeling too well.
She's not, no. It's nothing serious, just really one of these summer colds.
And I'm very grateful that she decided to send you in so that she doesn't bring it in and we all get it. So
yeah, that's right.
Not good for radio presenters.
No, no.
got a weak enough voice as it is at the moment. But how are you doing anyway?
I'm fine, yeah, really busy. Enjoying life.
As always. Yeah. And we're coming to the end of our short story competition, which is really good. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But before we do that, what subject do you want to pick on this week?
Well, I wanted to talk about sometimes when you're writing, you lose your initiative, you lose your motivation.
Your mojo.
Yeah, exactly that. And you can feel a bit flat and not what to write. It was just a few ideas of how you can get that back, really.
So where are you going to start then? You give me a note here, prompts, comps and writing retreats.
Yes, that's my go-to solution, really. Prompts are writing prompts, and you can get books. I've got one here. It's called 642 Stories to Write. it. And so it's 642 prompts. And what they do is they start you off. It's like a springboard. So if you're a bit lacking and you feel a bit flat with ideas, you've nothing going on in your head, you might have come out of a long novel that you just finished and you're exhausted. So this is really good to get it going again.
Can you just take a leap off the springboard and give me an example?
Yeah, I can. There's one here. It's a mistake. You decide to keep making it anyway.
So there's the...
And straight away, I mean, what did... We all make mistakes, Bob, but to decide to keep making it...
You speak for yourself.
I just think they just open your mind, and sometimes you can just write freely, and it is like having fun with the writing.
So this is a good place to go when you run out of ideas.
I think it is. You can get these. This is a book I bought off of Amazon, and it's by San Francisco Writers Grotto, but you can buy it. It's 642 stories to write, chronicle books, but there's loads of them that you can see in bookshops, local bookshops and things like that.
And you've used the idea yourself.
I have. Yeah, if I can't think of anything, I've just dried up of ideas, then this is a good way to start you off. And as I say, don't take it seriously. Just run with the idea. Just see where it goes.
Yeah, I think it's really cool advice, actually. Entering competitions is also a good thing to do, isn't it?
It really is. Well, as Dave was saying earlier, he's the Portsmouth Short Story Competition, and that gave him the confidence to turn what started off as a short story into the novel that we were listening to today and heard about today.
It quite fascinated me that he's, you know, he owned up that he didn't really start writing until he retired at 65 years old.
No, I mean, that's fantastic, because, and I think a lot of people do find something they really love when they get to that age.
I think that's a big point. It is that case of something you probably do want to do all your life, but truly believe you haven't got time for it because you're engaged working, bringing up family and such like.
Exactly, and that's where competitions can suddenly ignite that flame that you didn't even know was there, and I think it's really good for that.
Well, it certainly worked for Dave, didn't it? And he was really, I mean, it's a great interview that he gave this morning, and very confident. The book that he put in my hand, so there's something about that cover that's drawn me in already.
Yeah, well, I think two hands holding across like that.
Particularly multiracial,
yes,
as well.
Yes, multiracial. Again, it gives you the strength of friendship, family, all those things that we can all relate to, and I think that's where he hits a lot of emotional buttons in that book.
With writing skills generally, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be an author of a novel, do you? I mean, we could talk about things like playwriting and poetry, monologue writing, the spoken word, and sort of getting into writing skills. Have you got much to say about that?
I just think it's important that if you another way of igniting the motivation, if it's slightly lacking, is by changing what you're writing, either the genre that you're writing, or if you write short stories, look at writing a play, look at writing a monologue, because they bring out different skills. They're all slightly different skills you need for all the different types of writing, and I think that can excite you when you've been used to doing one thing. I've written short stories most of my life. I've just started trying to write monologues and for the stage, short plays for the stage, and it's a different medium to work in.
Do you have to have a different mindset? Do you have to think from a different place?
Yes, you do. Quite different. And if you've got a novel or a short story, it's all descriptive, and you write it down on the page. If you're writing for the stage, it's the subtext. You've only got conversation to work with, so the subtext is really important there.
I was talking to a poet recently. Oh, I haven't got a book here to remind me the name that we had in a small book. Really interesting lady. And, you know, the difference between writing a novel and a poem, massively different because of the conciseness that a poem has to be.
I have real respect for anyone that writes poetry, because it's like a condensed story. You have to condense your emotions, your storytelling down to two or three words. And so you have to pack a punch with every single line in a poem.
And that isn't easy, is it?
I admire anyone that writes poetry. And there's all different forms of poetry now. There's the narrative poems, which is really like a story, but it's got a rhythm to it. So poetry has a rhythm I think that's important.
Yeah. Something we mentioned off air earlier was writing retreats. And I've never heard of them. And it does sound expensive, but give us some brief on that.
They can be. I've always wanted to go on a writing retreat because if you've got a busy life, it could be family life, it could be working life, to actually allocate a specific amount of time to writing is a bit of a luxury. And it can be a wonderful holiday. I've got friends that have been abroad to the writing retreats abroad, and they can come up quite costly. You can actually organise your own writing retreat. I'm going to one in January. It's a group of writers, six of us. We hire an Airbnb and we pay for that between us, and it's much, much cheaper.
What a fabulous idea. Not just an excuse to share wine.
Two. That happens too. Sometimes more the drinking of the wine than the writing. But, you know, it's because you can all go into your, you know, rooms. We've all got separate bedrooms and little study areas. But if you want to, you can go to the dining room or a communal area and write alongside someone else. Everyone's different, you know.
I do understand this idea of a retreat. When I was writing an album that we released in 1984, and I don't want to go into any of that other than the fact that I got a bit of a writer's block, and so did the guitarist who was my co-writer. So the management sent us up north to Scotland, the whole band, to go and play, have some fun, climb a mountain, play some football, all that type of thing, and give us the opportunity to go and write. Yeah. And in a week, we wrote another five songs.
Wow. Yeah, and I think it's that, it is like playing, and you've got no pressure from outside. You've not got to think about the family, you've not got to think about the day-to-day work. You can concentrate on what you're doing.
100%. I mean, for us, we were living in a log cabin alongside Loch Ness. I mean, nothing could be more beautiful or surreal. And we wrote five songs predominantly about Middle Earth, but the environment inspired that opportunity.
Yeah, natural world.
And then we went out and toured the album for a few years. Had a wonderful life. Anyway, back. Not it's not about me. Stop it, Bob. Anything else that you think we could talk about that's going to be interesting for our listeners?
Well, I just think that people sometimes panic when they lose their writing motivation. They think that they're never going to write anything again.
It's over.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's known as writer's block, you know, and everyone's come across it at some time. But I think that the main thing you can do is write something completely different. So if you're in the middle of a novel, you can literally wear your brain out and your creative brain starts sort of faltering.
Shutting down.
Shutting down, exactly that. So if you try and write a very short story or a limerick or a poem, anything like that, it can free your brain from the harness of writing a novel, because it's quite a constructive thing. You've got to keep to the narrative, you've got to keep to the plot. So if you free yourself by writing a very short story or a monologue, anything that catches your eye in the news, anything like that, then sometimes you go back to the longer project and you've got renewed energy for it.
You said earlier that you are predominantly a short story writer, and when you set out to write a short story, do you know how long it's going to be?
It's really funny. That's a really interesting question, because it's weird that every short story I write comes around about between 1,200 and 1,500.
That's because she gets bored by then.
Probably.
Obviously, it was a joke. But
it's just weird that it always seems to come out about that. So if I'm writing for a competition that's like 2,000, then I might have to go back to it and then see if there's any other angles that I've overlooked or a part of the story that I skipped over too quickly, and then I can add to it. You don't want to add stuff just for the words. It needs to be relevant to the story.
Okay, Jackie, it's really interesting stuff, but we do need to move on now, because we've been running a short story competition, which it was your concept, and it's been so successful. As we've said before, 147 entries, and we've been playing the top 10.
Yes, we have.
And five of those this week. Today will be the ninth one of those. Tomorrow will be the final one of the top 10 in any order. And then tomorrow we're going to announce the winner.
We are. We really are. I'm so excited about it because all the top 10 have been fantastic stories. They're all very different.
They really have. And Anton Darby's read them all, and in such a way that you want more from that writer.
Absolutely. And I've had emails through from the writers that have been featured this week, the top 10 writers, and they have thrilled hearing their story on air, but also hearing it read so professionally by Anton.
Yeah, well, Anton is an actor by profession, as I think you know, and he's got passion with everything he does. His age, you won't mind me telling you, he's 81 years old. He came back to radio after a 40-year sabbatical.
Wow.
He's been in television a long time, but he's continued in the acting profession. Mm. And when he read the first story, which was the one Walk On By, I was absolutely gobsmacked by the way that he read it. Yeah. And I said, Anton, would you mind reading some more? He said, I get so, you know, engrossed in them. And one that he read, and I won't mention it because it would be unfair at this point. We might talk about it next week. One, he was at absolute tears at the end of it. It got him.
That's a huge skill that the writers enabled that emotion to come out. I mean, he's acting the part, so he's in there. He's in the middle of the story. You can hear that. But also, that's the skill of the storyteller as well.
100%. Oh, yeah. Mm. And I've got to say, we did random stories for a couple of weeks from the whole pool of all the entries, and there was some terrific stories that came out in those random stories, and then we've done this top 10. They've been immense, Jackie.
I've really enjoyed listening to them, and other people have. As I say, I've got quite a few emails through from people that entered that didn't get on the list, really interested in the stories, and especially the top 10, and they've enjoyed listening. And I think that's a really good thing to do, because listening to successful stories, well-written stories, is another way of learning. You learn a lot from just listening.
Absolutely, Jackie. We have to call it a day there because we've run out of time. In fact, we've gone over the amount of time we normally allocate for this, but it's such fun. I wish we could do more. We can't, unfortunately. However, tomorrow you'll be back to talk about
the... I will be back.
What are you going to do tomorrow?
I'm going to announce the top three, first, second and third places, which was really a tight decision. It was a difficult, very difficult decision for the judges, because all 10 were good and all 10 were very different. So you're talking minute differences to pick this first, second and third.
It must have been a really hard task. And having listened to those stories and read them since, those short stories that made the top 10, it would be difficult for me to choose the very top one. But I think in your case, you had multiple judges choose more than one.
Yes. We had 10 judges originally, and we had three head judges to pick the 10 from the 40 long-listed, and they found it exceptionally tricky.
Jackie, it is time for us to go. It's been a great pleasure having you in, and lots of fun, but you'll be back tomorrow, right?
I will, with the top three announcements.
I'm really excited. See you then.
Oh, okay. See you tomorrow.
Sorry, Jackie. Caught you out there. But yeah, we've got to move on. We're running out of time. It's time to play the song that inspired the story written by Elizabeth Jane Adriola for our 600-word short story competition. And it's this little beauty, Baker Street. And then Anton Darby will do the read of that story after this song.
Baker Street. The underground sucks him in with the commuter crowds. Evening dusk eclipsed by the gaping neon moor. He rides the escalator down its giant throat, one hand on the handrail, the other on his wallet. He strides through white tiled corridors. Never slow down, never show fear. On the platform he stands and dreams. The burnt air freshens. A soft breeze billows around him. The tunnel roof creaks, cracks and bursts apart, dissolving into open sky. He can smell hawthorn. He can feel rain. Then hot breath touches his neck. It strengthens and thickens. The platform trembles. His heart quickens with visceral fear. The monster is coming. The empty space is suddenly appallingly filled with glare and thunder and screaming breaks. It subsides, sighs, and opens its flanks. His ears protest as it screeches and rattles, hurtling around hidden bends, taking him home. In the street where he lives, teenagers flock and squabble outside the shops. traffic growls. Lighted windows in the high-rise flats paint squares of light across the sky. Mondrian gone mad. And somewhere is the barking of one lone dog. London's cliffs of concrete straddle the turgid river. Below the foundations run the tangled tunnels through which the trains writhe and scream. Where are the horizons? Where is the flat land? Where are the silent spaces? Come with me to Sky Garden, she says. She smiles, but is exasperated. This country boy, can he not see the horizon? All he needs to do is go high places. Where are the forests? Where are the woodlands? So she walks him through Hyde Park, her Jimmy Choo slingbacks ruined by the mud. He notes the sacrifice and does not ask again. You've done well for yourself, his friends tell him. Shirt collars loosened, Armani jackets flung over loungers in the wine bar. You've got it made. Fat city career. Rich girlfriend. Why don't you marry her, his mother complains. When is the wedding? But the wedding bells should chime for him in the village he loves. The flowers should be culled from the hedgerows and his parents' rose garden. He sees her, slim and elegant, her gym-toned body freshly tanned, her eyes, as ever, slightly mocking. Country boy, she still calls him when they whisper in bed, nuzzling and teasing. He sees her in white satin. She steps on the gravel path between tip-tilted gravestones. Alfred the vicar smiles and waits to greet her. Her ankle turns. She has grass stains on her hem. She looks around with distaste. Is this really what you want? The dream crumbles. He packs it away, wrapped in a familiar sorrow. She is his partner, not his wife. He puts his key in the lock. The stiff, high security bolt yields with a struggle. Coat and shoes off. She has rules. The maid has left his slippers ready. I made baklavas, she says, from the recipe they gave me in the delicatessen. She drifts past him, wine glass in hand. The room is bright. Her ornaments are subtle and obscure, fragile things, exotic things, city things. I'm going to my class tonight, she says. Then maybe to a club. She frowns over her phone, stabbing numbers, summoning an Uber. She kisses him. Her earrings swing and glitter. He gave them to her. They're jeweled butterfly wings. He watches TV, checks his emails, and dozes. There is wine in the bottle, but he wants beer. He dreams. The butterflies take wing. They flutter through a tunnel that lengthens on and on. They strain to reach the sunlight at its end.
Oh, goodness gracious. Another fantastic read by Anton Darby. That was Baker Street, written by Elizabeth Jane Andreoli. One of our top 10 stories from the 100 and, well, nearly 150 that got entered into our 600-word story competition. Tomorrow, we will play the final one of those top 10, and then we will be announcing the top 3 and the winner. It's very, very exciting.